That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
For like 20 minutes, yeah. What's happening, Derek? Good to see you.
It's all right.
No, it's all good. Have a seat.
I didn't surf because I drove from.
Are you kidding? You guys surfed already?
Yeah.
Oh, I hate you.
So warm the water.
I hate you guys.
So I drove down from San Francisco yesterday.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, and I was hanging for a surf.
Well, we're live.
Oh, good.
We're live.
Perfect.
I'm the only one who gets to listen to us.
Oh, that's okay.
Where'd you guys surf?
Was it Seaside?
George's. Yeah, little beach break. It was like 1 foot, but the funnest 1 foot that I've had in my entire life.
Really?
I mean, it was just the water temperature down there now is so toasty warm, but it's not overly warm.
Okay.
So you like both cool off, but also,
You can trunk it in the morning. Still.
Completely.
Really?
You kidding?
What'd you ride?
I brought a little 5'6" bottom feeder.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of perfect for it. Although I have been riding a cabbie anchor. Gabriel board. Fucking
you're
amazing.
You're the only person I know other than Gabriel who's ridden one. Like, it's bizarre, like, how much success he's had on those boards and how few people I see riding.
Well, it's so hard to get. You don't see them in shops or...
Do you think they're in Europe? Like, where are they?
They're in...
I mean, I know Pukas is.
Yeah, so but he's not with Pukas anymore. So it's Cabbie Anchor Surfboards, but they're based in the Basque Country.
Yeah.
And they're legends. It's him and his wife, and it's such a Mar and Park kind of operation. And we got a couple of boards to test, 6.0 on a 5.11, and I got the 5.11. That's so good.
Really?
High performance board that's really easy to ride. It's like the holy grail.
Is it as beefy as Gabriel's
boards? No, and I don't think Gabriel's boards are that beefy, and it's just been talked up. They're a little slightly wider-ish. It's not the outline. It's got the slightly forward outline, but not like a Hipto or something. It's not the rail line's a little bit straighter, a little bit forward. It's not even a forward wide point. It's just the outline is a bit straighter. That's what I reckon it is. And it's so user-friendly, but ultra loose. So you can ride them in, 1 foot waves and have a hell time.
Again, the visuals are always difficult to really like wrap your brain around. Number one, online. But then number two, like based on the artwork on the boards or the tail pad placement.
Yeah.
You know, you have to really kind of see it in person and feel it. But to me, his boards always look like thick in the tail and wide in the tail.
That's what I thought, but these are supposedly Gabriel's dimensions, and the pulled in little squash, a little bit of an edge through the tail, not particularly thick.
Okay.
You know, a little under, I think Gabriel's riding maybe 29 liters, and what I'm riding is 27.5.
Okay.
That's definitely not beefy. It was nothing like what I expected. I was hoping for a boat.
Yeah.
But didn't get a boat. I'm glad.
All right.
What are you riding these days, David Lee?
Dude, I haven't been surfing in weeks.
Look at me. I've surfed. Guess how many times I've surfed in a row?
What do you mean in a row? Like days in a row?
Days in a row.
Three.
Six.
No way.
Boom.
Is that a record?
I'm back. No, it's not an all-time record, but it's for sure. I'm completely back now. I'm back.
How does it feel?
So good.
Really?
It took me the first like three times. It's funny. I realized that starting surfing again is like stopping drinking. So I'm also on September, I'm going to go dry. I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to try it out. So day one, that's okay. I'm like doing a new thing. Day two, I was crawling out of my skin by 11 o'clock. 11 a.m. which is usually when I pour my first cocktail, just itching, just like, I can't do this. I'm going to go get a drink right now. Push through. Day three, fine. Today's day four. Feel like, okay, no problem. I'm going to make it today. when I started surfing again, I felt the same weirdness of day one. Okay, it's kind of novelty. Day two, I was in the water just like itching to get out because I was thinking, there's too many people out here. I'm not gonna be able to catch a wave. I'm gonna surf it awkwardly when I do. It's not gonna be fun. It's not gonna be enjoyable. And it wasn't, right? That those first surfs back are not enjoyable, but I kept on day three. Ooh, this is fun. Day four, great. Today, day six, just popping up, cruising down the line. All fun.
Crazy, dude.
Yep.
I'm more shocked about you not drinking alcohol than I am about you surfing.
Yeah, it's a shocker. It's a shocker.
Thank you, Glenn, for the drinks. We're at the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center, first of all, so that they LaCroix. Deserve
it. This is like Post Malone shit.
Dude.
Love LaCroix.
Can you grab a photo of us, too, if you don't mind? Hell yeah.
Without these in the photo?
Without the single-use plastics in the photo.
I love America's love of plastic. Everywhere you go, everything's
everywhere.
In plastic.
Yeah. Everywhere.
And you eat your sandwich for about 2 seconds and everyone just throws their plastic away.
Yep.
But we'll ban the straw.
Right, exactly.
We'll give the straw.
By the way, Derek, what's your impression of the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center? Have you been before?
Well, I was impressed that the ukulele in the foyer was in tune. It's so rare to pick up a ukulele. It was totally in tune, beautifully in tune.
It literally is one of the things that I have a problem with as well. As a little bit of a player, it's like, okay, that just sucks when they're
And you spend 10 minutes tuning the dang thing.
I didn't hear the uke when you walked in.
Oh, really? Didn't hear me play You've Got a Friend in Me?
Maybe you should play us out from today's show.
I should definitely. Yeah.
Do you want to grab that for us?
Give me a phone and I'll
flip
your... My phone sucks, or I would give you my phone.
Wipe off the lens maybe too. I don't know if it's messed up.
First of all, why haven't you surfed in 6 weeks?
Not 6 weeks, but I've been sick. So I've had a cold for like 2 or 3 weeks. It's been wild.
If you've got cancer, you don't surf, but if you've got a cold, you surf.
You think so?
Yeah.
I got the cold from surfing, actually, surfing filthy water.
The problem or the thing is, I think when you have a cold, when it's winter, that's when you really surf through. Because again, it's part of the making your body so toxic that you can freeze a cold out of your body.
Right. So you're right. I should get back in there this weekend. The problem is
the water's too
warm. My spirits are down and then the waves are crappy. So even if I go to the beach, it's like, I don't really want to surf. I'm almost hoping that it's windy or crappy or something. And then it is, and it validates my experience and I just go home.
Do you swim or anything?
No.
Because the ocean's great when you've got a cold. You can hack and spit and hold nostrils and shit out.
Yeah, I should be. I'm going to go this weekend.
Yeah.
I'm going to go. To be honest, I surfed 2 weeks ago on Saturday. So it's been 2 weeks is how long it's been.
Wow.
That's a long stretch.
We flipped, you and I.
We really have, dude.
We're in.
So I will tell you, I've taken about a month off from drinking once a year for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
It is the best month of the year for sure.
Yeah.
And at the end of the month, I'm like, oh, I'm going to do this 3 times throughout the year. Yep. And then I never do. Thanks, Glenn.
Oh. That's the plan for me is 3 months off a year.
Really?
You got the pamplemousse.
I got the pamplemousse. I'll trade you the pamplemousse.
Stretch a lemon for the pamplemousse.
I mean, we can. Do you like the pamplemousse?
I like pamplemousse.
Yeah.
Go 50-50 split. Yeah.
It's halfway nice. Through.
All right. Thanks. So anyway, Surfing Heritage and Culture Center. Well, this is your room, dude. This room has almost every bit of surf media.
Been published except for Stab.
Except for Stab.
They don't have Stabs in here.
No, I've got the collection somewhere.
Oh, you should bring it. You should donate.
Yeah, I'll happily donate.
You should check it before you leave too. Wild selection of surfboards.
Oh, really?
I think there's like 7 surfboards from Duke Kanamoku that exist like in the world, and 4 of them are here.
Wow.
And 2 of them were placed in museums from here. And they've got everything from like that to Kelly Slater's boards, Andy Irons, like all sorts of stuff. Okay. Big wave guns.
They have the Andy Irons Metallica board shop, which Chaz just got online.
I do.
Did you really?
I have the original. White Metallica, like big thick Metallica soda into the butt.
Found it on like eBay or something?
On eBay.
Okay.
I got it like a year ago. I was just like, I don't know what I was cruising eBay for. I think I was actually cruising, must have been 2 years ago. I think I was cruising eBay for, it was after I interviewed Michael Thompson for Cocaine and Surfing and thought, oh, he was just talking up the innovation at Gotcha those early years so much that I thought, oh, I wonder what like early Gotcha is on eBay. So I went on a Gotcha dive and there's not too much, but I bought a couple Gotcha pieces. Those Gotcha pieces were pretty epic back in the day. I mean, they were pretty fashion forward and fun. But then I saw the Andy Irons Metallica white. Remember the white ones?
Yeah.
Well below the knee.
Yeah.
epic.
The Rising Sun on it?
No, it's because it's just the big Metallica on the butt. Okay. It says Metallica on the butt. And yeah. then I think there's like some kind of crazy fire piping or something like that. But yeah.
Do you remember what you paid?
It wasn't expensive. It was like $20 at the most.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't like a vintage epic price.
Well, we got lots of stuff to discuss, boys.
Did you introduce who's here?
No. Man, really falling down on the job. Why don't you do the introduction, Chaz?
Today in the booth, we have the only, Derek Riley. Famous for a long time and for a lot of reasons. Most recently, the most famous author in Australia for writing about historical, notable Australian personalities.
Mm.
Yep.
Welcome to the show, Derek.
Thanks, David.
Also founder of beachgrit.com.
Awesome.
Yep.
What's his relationship to you, Chaz?
Oh, man.
Why did you guys drive here together today and surf in the morning without inviting me?
Would you have come down to Cardiff?
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
I don't surf anymore.
Derek, I think, I don't even know how long ago it was. My young daughter was asking Derek how long we knew each other today.
Must be 10.
Well over
more
10.
More than 10 years, yeah. I've 14 years.
I've been married now for 10.
Really?
Or 9. So. Shit.
That was a good wedding.
Yeah, it was a good wedding. So, but it was at least 5 or 6 years before that.
Mm.
So it's got to be.
So it would have been when we first started Stab. So about 2005.
Yeah,
I reckon. Yeah, because I saw your stuff in Vice,
mm-hmm.
and I contacted you. I think.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't understand me for the first 5 years of our relationship
or more.
And then when I was making Stab, Chaz used to write pretty much probably 60% of it.
Okay.
So we said, what was the name of the? We used to have this sort of newsprint section in it. It was just all political. I was talking about Israel
about
and
that.
Stuff. Yeah, well, it was called the Daily something or the Monthly. I can't remember what it was, but it was really oblique stuff.
Nothing to do with surfing, though.
No, nothing to do with surfing. It's had a big political
thing in
it. And then, so we worked together for the whole time that from starting Stab until I left in 2014. And then, and obviously when I was doing Beach Grit, started thinking of what my next thing was going to be after Stab. It had to be with Chaz. And then, so I contacted Chaz and said, you know, can we use your whole body of work in the back end? So when we launched, we had 100 stories.
Gotcha.
And then we went to Chaz's place and we launched it together.
Press go. Pressed live.
Yeah, it was so funny. We were just sitting on his kitchen table. We go, should we press it now?
Yeah.
Okay. I've got a question for you then, Derek. Chaz gets a lot of heat, and he certainly did back in the Stab days. I mean, the most famous story is the McFanning story, mm-hmm. you know? And he still gets a lot of heat now, and people give him a hard time. And I get emails from listeners. I mean, I should actually read one.
I've got a
pretty solid. You want one?
Good one? Yes, please.
I do, actually. this guy might not be happy with me reading this, but all right. Hey, David. Greetings from, I won't say where he's from. I'm a huge fan of your work, but sadly have to sign off due to your association with the misanthrope on The Grit. We'll be happy to sign up again if you decide to move. Kind regards. And then he corrected it with move on. So, I mean, I know you've gotten that feedback too over the years.
Yeah.
Why have you defended Chaz all along? What's Chaz's value? And does he misstep ever? And do you ever regret that decision?
I think anyone who likes to have fun, if someone isn't acting from a malicious place, I think it's very difficult to misstep, because I think people like Chaz and myself see the game of surfing as like a chess game, and everyone's just pieces in it. So when someone gets upset, you're just a character in a game. Or when someone rips into me or something, it doesn't feel like they're ripping into me personally. It's just a character in a game. And the whole online thing is just a big game. So people who, you know, weep and whatever over tweets, it's just absurd.
But people do. I mean, I feel like at some point online has actually become reality for a lot of people. And certainly people are making their living offline and all that sort of stuff. So at some point in the time that you guys have known one another, people do take it very seriously.
They do.
More seriously than they take real life. So even if that is your perspective, the people who might be receiving the barbs are the ones who are like, this is as real as...
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I just think that we're so soft now. Yeah. I mean, when the war with China comes, you'll have to fucking toughen up pretty fast.
Yeah.
You know, you'll have your bayonet fixed and be ready to fucking storm out of the trenches. You know, then you can worry about your tweets after, you know.
Yeah.
We've been another great generation.
So, America's even more soft, I think, than Australia.
I haven't been in America for 2 years, and it's interesting, and it's rad to see the changes.
Changes
in America. Well, the demographic change is so marked in the start, and the homeless, because I was in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And there's more homeless people in the streets than non-homeless people.
I mean, completely.
And the, the changing demographic, for better or worse, you know, it's, I was telling Chaz, I was at breakfast with our movie maker, Jack Boston, and there was a table of old people. And I looked over and I went, there's a whole table of whites over there. It was so funny. I thought, whites? You know, I never would have thought that, you know, yeah. before. And they look so odd and they look so out of place and yeah. and everything, you know, it was really odd.
Well, San Francisco is actually, I think, very representative of what's happening on the whole, which is no middle class.
Yeah.
Like, it's the most expensive real estate in the US and then more homeless than anywhere in the US, yeah. you know? So the people, all the like tech industry, multimillionaire 20-year-olds that are living there have to walk over human feces when they leave their house, literally. And the people, who are living on the streets used to live there for the last 30 years and they just got bumped out because they can't afford to pay $8,000 a month for a 2-bedroom.
Yeah, you know, it was weird wild. To see the Ferraris cruising around the streets and people sitting there with their carts smoking weed.
Right. Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah, it's really
super bizarre. It's always been a weird place. It's beyond weird now.
Yeah, and that fog that hangs over Ocean Beach, that was the weirdest thing.
Have you ever surfed Ocean Beach?
Yes.
Do you like Ocean Beach?
Love.
Really?
Yeah, I've never surfed it big. But I mean, I've surfed it fairly recently, a few months ago, when it was like 4 foot, super fun beach break peaks.
What do you love? Do you love it just because it's powerful beach break peaks?
Yeah, it's playful. Yeah, playful waves all up and down, so it's kind of spread out.
How big would you paddle at Ocean Beach,
dude? Like, I just don't think I could make the paddle out if it was 8 feet or bigger. Probably.
It completely confuses and confounds me how people make that paddle.
It's pure luck.
I've stood on the bluff there watching the ants try to crawl out there and just getting pushed back. And then you'll see a couple guys out the back just, you know, catching bombs or whatever. And I'm thinking, how in the world did you make it through 18,000 duck dives? Like, how did your arms survive that? It's freezing.
Right.
Yeah, it is not a warm beach.
Yeah.
You guys want to get into today's show?
Let's do it.
Now that our guest has been introduced. We got first of all, I owe Yago Dor an apology. It's a retraction from our last show.
Did Yago call in?
No, he didn't. But I got word from the channel in Tahiti. They're like, you're 100% spot on about William Cardoso being an absolute wuss. And same with Felipe, like verging on complete wuss. Yago, on the other hand, was charging. Like, he didn't get waves in that heat due to other factors. He was waiting for a wave, never came, whatever. But during the free surfs and all that sort of stuff,
charging.
Yago is charging.
Yeah. So Yago is not afraid. Yago is just a bad competitor. Yago does poor heat management.
In that heat in particular, yeah. And I lumped him in because I was...
I mean, I lumped him in too.
In my haste, I lumped him in. But William, properly, and everybody in the contest site said the same thing. They're just like, dude, that was embarrassing.
That was embarrassing.
And it verges on unprofessional. Aside from being just like not stepping up to the challenge, it's unprofessional.
So Yago, sorry to Yago Dora.
Sorry to Yago.
But also... Official. When you sit for 35 minutes in a heat without catching a wave, I don't know that you really get an apology. If you look like a wimp, I'm not saying you are a wimp, but I'm saying he looked like a wimp.
We could blame him for mismanagement, all sorts of other things,
sure,
but not for chickening out.
Okay.
It's surprisingly easy to miss, not get waves in the heat, particularly somewhere with long interval swell. You know, it could be 10 minutes, there's not one wave.
I mean,
there's four guys in the water.
I get how it could be totally.
And you wait 15 minutes for that wave and then you don't get that set and then you go, I'll wait for the next one. Suddenly 25 minutes are gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's so surprising how quick that can turn down.
Yeah.
Then you start to get a bit frozen up, even just sitting there in the water.
And he did get one wave and it was like a 5-something, but.
And he looked pretty good at it.
Yeah. The one that, I guess the one detail I didn't catch was the dueling format. The other heat in the water, Ricardo Christie, had priority on like a bomb that came through and he chickened out and Yago was next in line. And so Yago thought Ricardo was going, so he didn't go. And then Ricardo backed off and that would have been the wave that Yago needed.
Oof.
So you're going to rip into Ricardo now?
I should be.
Yeah.
Well, he deserves it for a lot of reasons, even at small wave venues. But I'll formulate that thought before I just deliver it off the cuff. So Derek, I'm going to let you guys step on this landmine. Chaz and I got a text message last night from a mutual friend about Lakey Peterson posing nude in ESPN's Body Issue.
Have you seen the photos?
No, I haven't.
It's on her Instagram. She just posted it yesterday. And this is the Body Issue. Kelly Slater's done it in the past.
It's the Body Issue with all the important parts removed though, isn't it?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So it's so odd to call it the Body Issue because it's not the Body Issue because the important parts of the body.
Yeah. Get blocked.
The 98% unimportant of the unimportant parts.
Yeah, it's very odd. It's so strives to be edgy, but it's so not.
What should they do?
Just show bodies as they are, you know? Pussies and shitties and dicks and shit. But it's funny because it's so taboo.
I hear what you're saying. So as a publisher, can you? I mean, do you have to classify your magazine differently? You could just publish that. Well, you would just jeopardize sponsor.
Yeah, well, Australia has the Office of Film and Literature Classification. When I used to work at a men's interest magazine, every issue would have to go to the OFLC and you couldn't have sexualized nudity. So I'm not sure what the law is here, but if the nudity isn't sexualized, you can have it in a magazine.
Okay.
I would imagine they could throw it in. I would imagine that ESPN would just have to put it in a shrink wrapping.
Right.
Like sell it like a Playboy behind the counter at that issue.
Guarantee they'll sell more issues.
Oh yeah.
Like guaranteed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know if they care about their physical magazine.
That's
anymore.
A good point.
Well, can you imagine LeBron just standing there naked?
Be epic.
Be beautiful.
Yeah. Dude.
I get that issue.
The contortions in each of those photos to block the private parts is always odd.
It is odd.
Yeah.
So this text came through yesterday and it says, I just finished up the new episode of The Grit and was chuckling at your guys' suggestion that there's not enough criticism these days. Today I saw a huge example of this. I always respected Lakey Peterson because she carried herself as a professional athlete. I found her social media post about how proud she is to show off her naked body and not be ashamed of it to be quite misguided and worthy of criticism. She is right about how girls should not be ashamed of their body, but like many other women who put value in taking nude photos of themselves these days, they mistake it for being brave and they think that most men will share their sentiment. The fact is, most men will look at those photos of her naked body thinking to themselves, gosh, what an amazing, or they won't think, gosh, what an amazingly beautiful, confident person. Most of them are actually sexualizing her. That's probably the reality. I wanted to comment on her feed, but I knew better than to start a controversy. I'll leave that to you guys. Thoughts?
Derek?
I think... Do men look at photos of naked women and sexualize them? It's funny because sexualization has become a dirty word, like racism or whatever.
Dude.
And why is it a bad thing to sexualize? I think she's awesome and gorgeous and I want to fuck her. I haven't seen the photo and I'm not talking about her in particular. But if you look at a photo of a beautiful naked woman, you want to fuck her. It's sexualized. It's not a bad thing.
Right.
You know? So,
no, I agree. And that was my thought too, is like, I think Lakey is aware of what our friend is saying. And she's okay with it. She's embracing it. That's why she's doing it, is because she's comfortable being like, I'm comfortable being sexualized. If I post a photo online without my shirt on or whatever, and people sexualize it, I'm like, cool. It kind of validates me. You know what I mean?
Do that?
Yeah. People like dad bods now, Derek. You don't have to be shredded. Okay. I can see the judgment.
The language he's talking in is just the script that most people operate on. Most people don't have the, thought processes or the vocabulary to express what they're actually doing and what they're feeling. That's just more platitudes. It's like this morning's story on Beach Grit, you know, the Schmaltz problem with the WSL.
I didn't see it. What's the story?
It's Long Tom wrote it.
Okay.
Just said we gave Eric Logan, you know, 9 months of our lives and he just delivered Schmaltz.
Yep.
You know, comical. It's like parody stuff.
He lost the room is the title.
That's right. He lost the room.
Yeah. Eric Logan has lost the room.
Okay.
But interesting. Back over to the real quick to the Lakey thing. I love this mutual friend, but also in this case, I think he's wrong. I think that picture, the body issue, ESPN's body issue is clearly their big marketing thing for the year, right? I mean, I'm sure it's the thing that probably gets the most external.
It's a great idea.
It's a great idea. And it gets them a ton of external, you know, hits and whatever, right? Because a lot of people cover the body issue. I'm sure the New York Times will cover it and who are, you know, who's in, who's out, blah, 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 blah. And so it's become this cultural phenomenon thing. It is bizarre that you don't actually see bodies.
It should be called the asexual issue.
Precisely. And that's exactly what I think, that every picture in there. So to this friend's point, everything in the body issue, and maybe this is just my opinion, is so asexual. I look at those people's bodies as they may as well be like weird, I don't even know, like cartoons or something, right? Like it's so divorced from any reality that I don't feel any real human impulse when I look at their bodies. Like every once in a while you think, oh, he has a big muscle here or something, not a big muscle there where you're thinking, because you don't get to see that, but a big muscle in his arm, say, and not that arm, because again, you don't get to see that. But in this particular case with Lakey, it is so asexual. I can't even imagine layering any feeling like, oh, I want to hit that on there, because there's nothing. It is devoid. Kelly running through the park for his body issue. There's Kelly running in a forest or something, right? Yeah. In a jungle somewhere. Kelly nude. I can't imagine one woman thinking, oh, love to end up with that. Like this weird, he looks like a strange bald elf going on a morning jog.
This just reveals where your sexual preferences are.
This is
just indicating you're not into athletic looking women.
But I would totally be. But these are so, I mean, ESPN goes so far out of their way to brush any ounce of sexuality off them. Which is the point, I guess. It's like athletes in action. Mm. And so in Lakey's picture, she's running to the beach, holding a board, or throwing a board, I think, right? The board is in the air.
To be honest, I didn't even look at the photos.
Oh, I think her board is like thrown up, she's having a fun time with it or something, and running. So you get the backside shot, right? You get to see her butt.
Yeah.
And then just the musculature. But again, there is nothing, it's so far beyond sexual. And I think ESPN, to slice off sexuality as a human thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess they're not cartoons. They're just androids. Like these are robots. Yeah. And cause without, you're taking off the human.
Is it John Wick where the people live in those little pods and they're all these kind of weird.
Yeah.
Things? Yeah. It's kind of John Wick.
Thing. Yeah.
I didn't see that either.
John Wick. It's Keanu Reeves, man.
I know.
So I disagree. And I think that ESPN goes so far, but I'll say the trouble here is that there's the lack of sexualization is the problem. That if you're going to show naked people for humans, and ESPN's, obviously trying to say, well, what? And you're like, can be naked and, you know, we can appreciate these people's bodies without.
It should be highly sexualized.
That's what it should be.
The hottest, realistically, kind of some of the hottest bodies on the planet. And the fact that you just look at it and go, ugh. That there's a fucking problem there.
Okay? Precisely. And the fact that they're already so mechanic athletes, especially top level athletes are mechanical people, right? I mean, I think even in the way they live, right? With their diets and the way they order their days and the way every minute is accounted for, they already look or appear or feel like machines. And then to stick their naked bodies in machine-like settings, I don't think it does any of them any favors, to be honest.
It's like the objective is basically to take what we see on the basketball court or whatever and just strip the clothes off and see that kind of athletic muscle striations.
Yeah, which is again, it's like Westworld on HBO where they're just these very, very complex machines.
Yeah. Interesting. So, but the reality is it the one time a year you're going to go to ESPN's website?
Hell no.
Still not going.
No, I wouldn't even go now.
I've
never looked at it in my life. I just see photos of it occasionally. I saw the Kelly one.
It'll pop up in my feed and I will glance at it as quickly as I glance at a realtor selling their house. Right. Like I have zero emotion attached. I have not even the faintest interest in who's going to be. I think ESPN tries to spruik the who's going to be in the body issue, right? Like which athletes are going to appear this year. I have zero care.
Man, it's tough to get people to read a magazine nowadays.
Do you care?
I didn't know. Yeah, a little bit, I guess. I kind of always am curious who the list of people is or are, but to be honest, I didn't even know ESPN had a magazine until Kelly did that issue. So I think they executed part of their goal just by making it aware.
Do you think the American public or the worldwide public, I guess, is waiting for it and like people used to wait for the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue?
No, I don't.
Did you used to get the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue?
No.
Did you care about it?
Yeah. As a kid who didn't have access to naked people, on the internet that we have now and all that, that was huge.
I mean, Sports Illustrated would always throw in a sheer bathing suit in there too. Remember? Yeah. There would always be a fishnetty bathing suit that you could see a little bit of nipple.
What about the one where they painted on bathing suits?
Ooh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yep, that was a recent one. I think that was one trying to compete with ESPN's body issue, thinking, wow, we just got burned. Our one franchise just got taken out by ESPN.
Who would you like to see in the body issue of ESPN?
From the surf community.
Anyone. By the surf community, since this is a surfing thing.
Are we talking the real body issue, like full nude, or are we talking highly posed?
Well, it's funny. I was just going through a little thought process about the body issue and whose body I'd like to see. And James is our general manager of Beach Grit. He went to see Tommy Caldwell and the other guy who was in Dormwall. And he wanted to see their hands and see their fingers, how splayed out their fingers were. I'd love to see, Alex from Free Solve to see his hands and his forearms and and his chest and stomach and that sort of stuff. So I think there's a case for it. You know, the examination of a significant body that does these incredible tasks.
But you don't need to see the whole, like,
no.
I would love if the body issue was exactly, was focused on the thing that they use, where you really wonder about, like, cause watching Free Solo, thinking how much pressure, or when he's doing his finger pulls, right?
Yeah.
How does that reshape the fingers? Yeah. You're exactly right.
So I think it really splays them out.
Yeah.
Somebody was talking about that he does have some extra, I don't know, his tendon or whatever, but his anatomy has an extra something that allows him to do what he does.
Yeah.
I mean, the obvious thing here is that Beach Grit could do a body issue now.
Yeah.
Beach Grit, body month.
Well, we just have to, I would want to have like completely average surfers just standing full, like Ricardo Christie, just standing fully nude, just a straight head on. Yeah. Or who's the Avoca Jesus? Wade Carmichael.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah
Wade
yeah.
Carmichael just standing there fully nude, like not trimmed up. Just
full frontal male nudity is becoming much more commonplace nowadays. You might have to break the limits by going like full rear view of dudes.
Yeah. Just them standing.
That's the next horizon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The rear dude, the rear thing though has been a like butt double thing for a while. Daniel Craig getting out of the water as James Bond.
That's true.
And with male full frontal nudity, there's male full frontal nudity, then there's male full frontal nudity, isn't there?
What's the second one?
One that has an erect penis.
Oh.
That's the whole thing about sexualized nudity is you can show a flaccid penis, but you can't show an erect penis.
That's a good point.
Maybe that's Beach Grit's body issue.
That is. Who from the world tour will be first to sign up? Whoever's getting booted off tour this year, who needs work, they're going to be like, Jadson's like, dude, I've been trying to get a sponsor for like 10 years.
Years ago, I wanted to do at Surfing Life, years and years ago, my first job, I wanted to do Robbie Page naked and just with the crucified. We're going to get arrested for acid in Japan. Just have him on the cover, just crucified naked.
Did he like the idea?
I don't think so, no. I've floated that boat a few times.
This kind of makes me realize, I think things like highly produced photos and even video too would actually add a lot of value to Beach Grit.
Like you guys, photos, no. Because
like stuff like that. Phone. But yeah. Stuff like that, no?
No. Nah. On the internet, you can just forget high-end photography. It's a waste of everyone's time and money. Videos, for sure. But photography, because look at the thing you're looking at on, that Nokia thing you got. Your flip phone.
David, there's a razor, dude.
Which is, I mean, I think Derek does have a point. Like that whole body issue, like Peterson, I'm sure that photo shoot day was $10,000 to $15,000, like, you know, to grab that one image.
Yeah, I know.
And you flip through it on your feed so quickly that, but I guess we're talking about it, so.
I mean, I'm trying to think of, this is going to make your point because I can't actually think of an image that had like a lot of impact, but, or in recent years anyways, I'm trying to think of like some photo editorial thing that really made an impact on me. But I love when I do get it, you know, but you don't want to be the one footing the bill for it.
No, and it's funny because I noticed on Instagram, you used to put a beautiful photo and get a lot of hits. Beautiful photos don't get the hits anymore. Just that dancing dwarf
dwarf.
Or the monkey on his little motorbike falling over.
Oh my gosh, it's so good, man. If it has a cat in it, I'm even more interested.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What about, okay, so talking about evolving role of media, let's talk about the pirate stream. How practical is this? And pitch it to me. What do we need, Chaz?
So I think
what's the concept?
I think what we need here, been ragging on, obviously, especially after Tahiti. I mean, I think we can all agree in the room that Tahiti's commentary was a new low.
I didn't know it until, was it Long Tom or Long Surf Tom, Ads?
Yeah.
So Long Tom wrote the article, and as I read it, I'm like, dude, you are 100% correct.
Yeah. A new low bar has been reached by, and I don't fault any of them individually. I think there's bad direction coming from the top down. What they think, what the brass, wherever they're getting what they're supposed to say from or how they're supposed to act on air. And maybe it's too baked in, right? Like maybe this was a Paul Speaker directive or something. And it's just, it's been the same cast for long enough now where bad habits maybe are just completely, you know, they've been stuck in the kiln, fired, and it's done now.
Like, and everyone seems very anxious to please the masters.
Precisely. And they can't break out. And again, I think when people maybe perceive what I'm talking about, maybe they hear what I'm talking about, maybe they're perceiving just being negative. I'm not talking about being negative at all. I'm talking about real honest critique, like the way they honestly critique every single sport that I watch, from tennis to football to anything, right? There is honest critique as the game is going on of what people did well and what people did poorly, which doesn't exist at all in the WSL. So bad.
I think they've got the talent. I think the talent's there.
But
you know, Strider and Ross. And,
but if those bad habits are baked in and they can't break it, then I think you got to throw babies out with the bathwater. Unfortunately,
I don't know who you get though.
I totally agree. Like Strider, they all have it in them.
Yeah.
The only one that I don't know who has it, if Joe Tripel can say a critical thing. Like I just don't know if that's part of his personal makeup
or even a meaningful thing. Yeah. It just seems like. Just seems like the win, meaningless platitudes he throws out there.
Completely. But the rest of them for sure. Like Potts has it in there guaranteed, right? Strider, yes. Kaipo, I think has real insight. I'm a fan of Kaipo, to be honest.
Yeah, me too.
And I think like with the right.
Ross is brilliant.
Like, so they do have a team, but let's just say they're beyond repair and the world is in need of a pirate stream. So what I was thinking is let's just serve it up, right? So I would love to try for Surf Ranch. Maybe this is too,
No, I think we could pull it off.
Okay. And so basically just the things that I love about Beach Grit is that it's analog and you know, those are the things that I think we don't go out. I mean, we try as hard as we can. We don't necessarily want to be analog, but the, you know, live chat, I mean, it's honestly, you get on computer, turn on the show, and you sit and type in, you know, I mean, it doesn't get more analog than that, which so again, for the pirate stream, just something really analog where you turn down the volume on the WSL of their broadcast. We're watching also and calling what, you know, our dream or calling it the way we see it. In a perfect world, we would have every guest in the world lined up, right? It would be nonstop guests, which hopefully we'll be able to get some. If we can pull this off, but even if we give it a punt ourselves, and even if we totally fall on our face and fail and think, ooh, come the takeaway is it's a lot harder to call live surfing than we thought or whatever.
Which guaranteed is going to be one of the takeaways.
Whatever it is, like whatever happens with trying a different feed, I think is completely valuable, even if it's an utter failure.
There's no other options right now. So we got at least give somebody an option. Yeah. So my thought is you and I make sense to do it because we do this podcast, but I don't think we're necessarily the best guys to do it. So I'm fine like setting up all of the audio and that sort of thing and then inviting everybody.
Here's why I think you and I are good to start and then like even kicking it off to somebody who's way better than us is you and I have rapport. Like we've been doing okay. this now for what podcast are we on?
43, 44.
Exactly. So we've just sat across the mic from each other enough.
Who's the 43rd president of the United States?
Oh my gosh.
I got it.
Go.
G-Dub.
Yeah, G-Dub.
Okay.
The best president we've ever had, George W. Bush.
And Dick, I want you on my team.
Such a good movie.
So from Long Tom's article, Ross Williams was the best of the truly woeful bunch, but his fallback line, quote, "There are no easy draws on tour. Everybody is a weapon," end quote, sounded more and more peculiar as the event transpired. He first employed it as Kanoa Igarashi was giving a tepid performance that was far from the worst of the day. A generous appraisal is that he was just thought, or a generous appraisal of Ross is that he was just thoughtlessly repeating this rote phrase. The actual story was the exact opposite. Here we had an actual world title contender in Kanoa who had not been tested in heavy water and was being found wanting, right in front of our eyes. So I think that's actually, like you're saying, we need critical, not just negative. Long Tom's assessment, that's actually a very valid assessment, which is there's a much more interesting story happening here than what's being conveyed to the public. And you don't have to be rude. You don't have to be like, oh, Kanoa's, you know, sitting on the shoulder, afraid to go, cowering. No. We have a world title contender who's being tested, his medal's being tested, and he's not as willing to go as Jadson, who's fledgling, who can never requalify, who
doesn't have any. What a great story that is.
I mean, it's phenomenal. Yeah. And Jadson was hucking himself, you know, which they do acknowledge. But
I mean, yeah. Imagine though, again, and I hate to use other analogies, but imagine if a rookie quarterback who had all this hype around him, right? Like, big shot in college, made it to the pros, his first game, and he was just failing. And imagine that
and then he gets MVP end of the year.
Exactly. Right. And that the announcers don't say anything about his performance. Like, they don't say anything about the storyline of this guy was the biggest guy in college. He did this. Now he got signed for X amount of money on this big team, blah, blah, blah. And he's blowing it. And you don't have to be rude in saying he's blowing it. You just speak truth to what you're seeing, right?
Yeah.
It was like, say it was Daniel Ricciardo in the Formula One, and he was doing super slow laps. And they'd be going, what's happening with Daniel Ricciardo? He's losing his time. So he's 10 seconds off the pace. Something's happened to Daniel Ricciardo. Is he afraid? Yeah. What's happening? You know, but it doesn't happen.
I've gotten at least 5, maybe 10 references to other sports. This morning one came in like, check this video from the UFC. Look at the incredible insight that these commentators are providing from a technical standpoint, but also opinions, you know, like, and these are fighters. These are meathead jocks who have this intellectual critique. Why can't we get that in surfing?
There's an odd thing about surfing, I think, where people, and I'll get emails somewhat regularly, like critiquing me of people like, well, you wouldn't paddle at 8-foot pipe or whatever, right? Yeah. Where it's the thought in surfing that you need to be able to be a CT level surfer right now in your prime. You need to be that you yourself, that I myself would have to be willing to huck myself over a ledge at Chopu in order to criticize what I see.
Right.
No other sport has that at all. You don't have to be an MVP quarterback, much less have ever played football in your entire life to be able to call a good game, right? I mean, the idea that you have to do the thing, of course, I think that's what the color man is for, right? Mm-hmm. That's what the Ross and the Potts is for, is to actually have been there and, you know, done it. I think the play-by-play guy in traditional sports has always, you know, a basic reference, probably played as a kid and or into college, but really as good at calling what they see, which the Surf League straight men in Terpel and who's the other straight man? I guess Kaipo, this last one, but typically, oh, Ronnie, which Ronnie does a good job. Mm. I think Ronnie has the most potential of all of them to be a real good straight guy and to feed his color man, right? It's just, unfortunately, Ronnie's color man is Potts, who is the color of Pete, gray.
Yeah. Pete, lots of times when he and Ross were together, that was the ultimate.
Sure.
How can they possibly manufacture interesting commentary during the Freshwater Pro? Like, I think that, I don't know, 50% of the commentary during a normal event is about tactics, priority, rivalries, where the person's sitting in the lineup versus the other person, wave selection, all of that stuff really fills 50% of the time. And all of that is a moot point in the wave pool when you know exactly when the wave's coming and where to sit and all that sort of stuff.
Completely.
It's going to be the most boring, like, how are they going to do the job?
They better be, if they're not totally prepping and doing homework, which I would imagine they are, because since the whole thing is actually formulaic, they know exactly, you know, we got a 4-minute window to say something. I wonder if they're going to have basically prepared packages that they're going, you know, they have all their backstory lines. Or now let's learn about the history of Lemoore, you know, 3 minutes, 30 seconds later, bam, and now we're ready for another wave. I don't know, but if they're, I mean, it's the one place on tour where you know exactly what's going to happen. So if they don't have, if it's not the best commentary, to be honest, or at least the most polished commentary, because they know they're not going to be surprised by, oh, you know, I was in the middle of a thought. Now here's this wave that I got to call. And then I forgot what my thought was.
Yeah. What's your thoughts on Surf Ranch Pro in general, Derek?
I think it has potential. I really do think it has potential to be a super high performance event. I'm not sure if the wave is perfect for that sort of event. And they shouldn't score the tube. The tube should just be taken out of the scoring equation totally, because all of us can sit in those little tubes like that. So I think it has to be combos and big airs. And the wave isn't that great for big airs, but has that end section. So I think it should be combinations. And it's just like a street skate or something. But take the tube out completely. Forget people sitting in the tube for 20 seconds.
You know what's bizarre is, like, the original goal that Kelly had and even that we had as kids is like a perfect barreling wave.
Yeah, such an 80s kind of fantasy wave.
It's not that interesting. No. And even as you're saying it, the high performance thing, the combos, the wave actually isn't that high. Like, even when they go up to hit the lip, it's a soft lip. And obviously it's peeling perfectly.
And you can't do roundhouses.
No, you can't really do anything.
No, it's like sort of cut downs. And
the guy's blowing the tail out. In the last 2 years, we started seeing Felipe and Griffin Colapinto.
Yeah.
Like blowing it out before the barrel section.
Yeah.
But even then, it's not ideal to do a proper blowout. They're forcing it and they're so talented that they can do it, but they're stretching their athleticism. It's not like lowers.
Yeah.
There's way more high performance waves in the world than that is. It's really, its strongest suit is its barrel. And that's the least interesting thing.
But if you come out of if you throw the towel and come out into the tube backwards, I think that should score. But just stalling and getting 20-second barrels, I think that kills the event.
And it's super boring to watch.
Yeah, but I think I certainly think it has potential. I mean, there shouldn't be 36 guys there. Should that's be 12.
Insane. I don't even think it has potential, to be honest. Like, I would love to hear the potential that it has.
But
potential as what? Like a wave to surf?
Just as a competition. For a person to show their full arsenal of maneuvers. And it's amazing that Gabrielle can go from Chopu, win that, potentially go to the Freshwater Pro and win it. And that shows to me that Gabrielle's the one surfer who can win a world title this year and not have any question marks around it because of John John's departure.
Yeah.
You know, he's remarkable.
I think, to Derek's point, like just the wave they have there is not the ideal wave for this format, right? Like I could totally see how you could have an artificial wave on tour. Just Kelly's wave, I don't think is the right wave.
Yeah.
I think what I love about Gabriel and what he did in Chopu isn't just that he can get to his feet and ride the tube more perfectly than everybody else. So much of it is the tactics and also his ocean prowess and awareness of always being in the right spot at the right, actually Owen turned out to be in Tahiti. But all of that stuff is what makes them phenomenal surfers. Like, how is Kelly always on the best waves everywhere he goes in the world? Somebody exerting their dominion over their board in a wave pool is much more a gymnastic effort than it is any of those other things.
Well, the contrast, and it's only one event out of 11, you know, so I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but I just think the amount of people there,
it's insane.
And the scoring of the tube. Because I think I would love to watch a guy do 12 different maneuvers on a wave and go, holy fuck, things that are possible. I don't know. It's gymnastic. But I think for one contest out of 11, I think it's really good. I find it fascinating, but not in its current format.
Should those points go towards a world title, or should it be an?
Yeah, but it should be. I should be abbreviated. It should be 50%. I reckon. Yeah.
I mean the tiered
has to be tiered. It has to be weighted. Yeah.
Who wrote that?
I wrote that.
Yeah, that was.
It's funny because I thought it was a shit story that would just sink. You know, and you're just sitting there, and you go, "Fuck, what can I write today?" And I was going, "Yeah, I think Pipe and Chopu should get more points than Lemoore." But I think it should count to the world title because, like I said, Gabriel can win both. That shows what a complete surfer is, because he could be a hell surfer and at Pipe and Chopu, whatever, Jadson Andre, and kind of dog it in the pool.
Yeah.
You know, so I think just have a world champion surfer should be able to win in every condition.
Yeah.
You know, should blow your mind in 2 foot wave, and then they go out and it's 12 foot.
They should really, I mean, if they're going to play this game with the pool, though, they should really finish the whole dang thing in one day. You should, I mean, you should just bang through
it. Yeah, it was comical how boring. Because you saw the glaring deficiencies in people's technique.
Oh, completely. There's
a fucking microscope on people, you know. And to watch your friend from Chopu and have to sit through those heats.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
He showed up wearing a panda helmet or a panda like head last year, like a DJ or something, right. Which was like great. Like sure. You should be, everybody should be doing that. Yeah. You should be playing the theme, the Rocky theme song or whatever when you enter. But one of the problems for me last year watching it was I was there on site, which adds to the excitement, and I wouldn't watch a complete wave. Yeah. Be like, Kaloe's going to up and riding. You hear the train coming, and I'm like, okay, well, I know that the first 30 seconds of the ride are just soft safety surfing until the barrel section. So I just keep typing what I was typing and working on the podcast. And then as I knew he was getting halfway down the pool, I'd glance up to see the critical section, and then I'd look back down while he's still on the wave.
Yeah, right.
Imagine that happening at Pipe, where we know a set's coming and we all look away.
Yeah.
Like it would never happen. That's a problem for their business.
Do you think, a question that I have about the Freshwater Pro, will they cut away to ads and, I mean, to advertisements specifically for the Freshwater Pro mid wave, like they do regularly at every other wave?
It's odd, isn't it?
It's the most bizarre thing.
The station director.
It's, and to show, I mean, at Tahiti, it happened so many times to show an advertise. It's not like they were having to fill, oh man, we got to get our Jeep ad back up. No, it's for a 1 minute run of watch the Chopu Pro or the Tahiti Pro.
And the amount of times they talk over a wave and it's an epic wave and they're interviewing someone.
And they just don't pull away. They must. That
was part of Longcom's article too.
Yeah, yeah.
He identified, there was a moment, I think BL was talking to the girl about saving the coral reefs.
You ever got a 10 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And BL's like, oh, I was distracted by talking to the girl.
It's funny though, because he said there was no parallels in sport. And I remember as a kid, there was the most exciting test cricket match and they go for 5 days. You've waited all day for this moment and they cut to a commercial break just as the test concluded. Oh. In dramatic circumstances, and people have been sitting there for 5 days and they missed it. So it's
cruel. And I mean, it does happen, but it happens every single day of every single event. I mean, every single day, they're guaranteed to cut to commercial during at least one of the better waves of the day. And also you'll watch at least one of the better waves of the day in a micro screen while Rosie's interviewing somebody. Right. I mean,
what do you guys think of the post-heat interviews? Because Rosie never cops any heat. Is it because she's really sweet?
Yeah, it's because she's sweet and pretty. And she does, she's functional. Like, she doesn't do bad. She just doesn't do good. You know, but what are you going to do, though? Is there any way to get a rise? I'm sure there is. I'm sure if you had, remember when Paul Fisher was he doing the, if you had Paul Fisher there.
Yeah, I think he was doing them at the US Open.
Yeah, exactly. And they were epic because he would ask people really awkward questions and stuff, even people he didn't know.
Yeah.
Well, like you could tell some surfers he was just comfortable with, so willing to just say whatever, but it's just his persona.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, he was asking the best stuff and it was really genuinely funny.
He would catch him off guard with some random something.
With honestly, like, and it wasn't just like canned, this is my shtick, you know, hey, you want to touch my penis, huh? Like he would really push them into where they're just sitting, like chuckling nervously.
So there's probably a place between a Paul Fisher and a Rosie Hodge. Is the sweet spot.
I like the post-heat interviews with the losers.
Yeah.
They could do more of that.
Yeah, they're great.
They don't always do it.
Yeah.
They rarely do it.
Right.
Like
only
that.
If they do
like
it way meaningful. More than they used to, and they must be contractually obliged to
be
interviewed.
I bet they're contractually obliged to heat interview if they win.
Yeah, and they lose. You're right. The loser interviews are amazing. Because you learn nothing from winning, you know?
Yeah.
Losing, you know.
And you don't even need to ask a good question. You can just look at the demeanor and the eyes of the loser and know, like, you at least have some emotion attached to it.
But the best interviews Rosie does is with Jordy because she knows him so well.
Mm-hmm.
And they have some great moments.
That's true. Jordy, some of the best lines Jordy has ever given in his entire life have been to Rosie.
Yeah. Jordy's a piece of gold.
I had an interesting experience this morning. The New York event started for the longboard tour.
Oh, yeah. Did you?
How excited are you guys?
Did you want to watch it?
I was getting ready to come here, and so I just put it on, just to see what it was about.
Well, how are the waves?
Not good.
Oh, I thought they were hoping to get some Dorian.
Oh, I think they're going to run like the pointy part of the event in the good waves.
Oh, like every tour should be?
Exactly. Sweet. So this was the women and day one, and the surf is marginal. But the interesting experience was, you know, the WSL is always chasing this elusive non-endemic audience, like new middle of the country surfers or non-surfers. That's what I felt like viewing this event. I felt like I didn't know one of the surfers' names. The longboarding is also just kind of foreign to me. You know, I see a little bit of it here and there, but it's kind of foreign to me when I only see A-plus clips. This is watching somebody trying to navigate a lineup in very mediocre conditions to find a wave at a beach break on a longboard that somehow connects for them to get up to the nose, which is all very difficult to do. And I didn't know the commentators in the booth. So all of it was foreign to me. And I thought to myself, this is boring. This is very difficult for me to understand. I don't know which waves they're looking for. I don't know any of these people's ability level. I don't know their backstories. I don't know their rivalries. It'll take me 5 hours to develop any level of interest, and there's no chance that somebody's going to watch for 5 hours. If you apply that to middle American, stumbles upon a CT event, even if it's at Chopu, I think it's tough to hook them in.
You know? I love how middle America gets used as the sort of the holy land.
Whipping boy.
Did you notice I said middle of the country earlier? Because I didn't want it to just be America.
Because I reckon, you know, if pro surfing reached every keen surfer in the world, or every keen surfer became interested in pro surfing, it would be massive.
Yeah.
But it's pretty rare to find people who are that interested. Kids, my kids surf and all their friends surf, and everyone goes, yeah, I like Julian Wilson or I like John. But I was a contest on it. I didn't know. And it seems to be people in their men in their 30s and 40s.
Now that I'm such a surf dog, breaking, who's the guy who surfed like for 18,000 days in a row or whatever, that old guy?
Dale Webster.
Now with my 6 days that I'm...
Is he stuffed in here somewhere?
He should be.
Shivering.
Yeah, now that I'm approaching Dale Weber with my 6 days of surfing in a row, I have not heard, and it's been packed down at, you know, it's warm, water, warm air, it's hot down there. Perfect time for surfing. Packed lineups. Have not heard one person mention in the lineup, not one mention, 6 days, not one mention of any pro surf event, full or pro surfing, full stop.
No, people talk boards.
Yeah, people talk boards. That's exactly what they do. I've heard endless board talk between people who know nothing, right? Yeah. Not that I'm this big board fount of knowledge, but people talk boards. People talk. Heard some guy yesterday bring up like, oh, I got a new gazelle or something, a new flower. I'm going to plant it. And the other guy I was talking to was paddling further and further away. Like, I think we're going to plant them this afternoon. He was shouting. You'd think that, like, and I wonder, and obviously it's not a one-to-one, but I can't imagine any of those people either watching surfing. So the pool that watches pro surfing, I think, is a microcosm of a microcosm of a microcosm. Yeah. Like, it's not even surfers. It's high performance shortboard surfers.
Yeah.
And then of them, you get a tiny percentage. Even if they could broaden it out to most-ish people who ride high performance boards and ride them competently, maybe you would have some people, but they're not even there.
No.
They're not aiming for them at all.
It's analogous to the base surfboards. Remember base surfboards when Simon Anderson, Darren Hanley, and Morris got together, they're going to have this massive thing. But they'll be all building high performance boards, which is 1% of the market. And then you had another company just come in and go, well, I'm going to build for the other 99%, and they're massive and base folded and everything. And same with the WSL. Unless pro surfing was so compelling, it made every surfer proud.
Yeah.
It was just so fucking cool. You know, this is not particularly cool.
Well, so who is, in that analogy, who's the opposite company other than Base? Like, if WSL is Base.
Oh, yeah, it's, I think it's GSM. They do all the, they used to do make all the Hiptos and.
No, I know, but.
In media.
In media.
Oh, media.
So is it Red Bull doing the Cape Fear event that captures, there is nobody.
There's nobody, no.
Yeah.
There's nobody selling surfing well, I think, to any kind of
But the raw materials there, you know, you got Gabriel, John, Italo, the Kelly stories. Slater. Kelly's 47 years old. You know, you have one of the greatest athletes of all time, and I think you do have a good commentary team. But we're just talking in the car on the way here that I think unless there's that cultural DNA within the company that you realize that pro surfing doesn't have to be run over 2 weeks and it doesn't have to have 36 people. it can be totally changed. You could change it tomorrow. You could go in the office right now and go, fuck this, this isn't working. 2020, we're going to have 12-man tour. We're going to fly them on our Dirk's private jet. It's going to be all logoed up. We're going to have permits all around the world, have a two-week waiting period. We're going to go, fuck this one right now. And the tour is going to have Jaws on it. It's going to have Chopu and it's going to have a wave pool. And the person who can conquer all those things, that's a world champion. And your commentators can say whatever the fuck you want because these guys are all on contract. If they don't like it, too bad. That, to me, that's exciting. It's a one-day event.
The WSL really branding hard night start, you know, circa 1976 or whatever, really yeah. trying to make this historical line. And exactly. It's what we're talking about in the car, where there's no real historical line in surfing. Like, and you don't have to, it's not like it's this ancient, ancient Hawaiians had 32 surfers. That's why we have 32 surfers, right? Like you could break the entire model tomorrow, say this, okay, great. We gave this a good long go. It's flat out not working. You know, it's not working as, you could get on if they want a mainstream audience, you could actually get in front of a mainstream audience. Mm. If you did this version, if this hot, sexy 12 surfers were flying around on this epic jet, living this lifestyle, flying to the best waves in the world, banging out one day events. I mean, people would like it. People would like the lifestyle aspect. They would like it. It would be aspirational. What on the, God bless Jadson Andre, but poor Jadson, there's nothing aspirational about him at all. I mean, I guess his continual work ethic.
The most aspirational, I would say.
I mean, but
him flying in the face of adversity over and over.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. But
how good was KO staying in his van in Margaret River?
I loved it.
That was so cool.
Yeah. I guess using the wrong examples, but yeah, the WSL doesn't do a good job of selling the lifestyle of surfing because all they're trying to do is sell it as a sport. The sporting aspects of surfing are not very interesting. What's surfing again? I mean, I've beat this reef to death, but surfing is about more than just surfing, right? Surfing is a bigger thing than just physically standing on a board, moving down a wave.
It's almost the least interesting part of it.
Yeah. But that as part of the lifestyle. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Ricardo in the van at Margaret, Jadson, blue collaring was his way up. Stinking little plumber, Adriano D'Souza's, you know, bomb at the end of that heat. I mean, it almost made me cry. Like and who is he serving against?
Italo.
I wanted Italo to win, but ADS getting that bomb. Oh, there he goes. What a great
That's what I find
scoring.
Myself doing.
Did you call Adriano ADS or ADS?
I usually do AIDS.
Okay.
Just to confuse everybody. So Jadson does that to me almost every single event.
You put a tear in your eye.
And even though I love him intensely right now, because we just come off of Chopu, by the time we get to Surf Ranch, I'll have forgotten again, you know, and I see him stand on a wave and I go, oh God, I do not want to watch that guy surf. But then he'll do something so insanely defying the odds. And again, this has started from a long, long time ago. Just him qualifying for tour was part of it, you know? Him coming from the slums that he came from, like that.
I remember I was a huge Jadson fan when he first hit tour, because didn't he come out of the gates hot too?
He beat Kelly at Soccerama
in
2010, doing the exact same air reverse in every heat on every
But it was rad back then.
Yeah. It was a badass move. It was like, all right, you got to give him an eight. Yeah. Like, it's that gnarly. You know, but even so in the last couple of years, it's like he's down to Sunset and he needs to make the quarterfinals in order to do it. And it's the round before the quarters and he needs a 9.17 and there's a set on the horizon and there's 10 seconds left. And then he goes and he gets it and then he's screaming on the beach. He has those moments every year.
Him. I don't know how the commentators did a good job of pumping up at Tahiti. Like, you know, he got his airtime there, but yeah, his performance at Tahiti. And I think it must've been a Rosie interview after where he claimed, you know, Chopu is his favorite wave in the world. And you could just see his eyes glowing where it really was, where this Brazilian kid who, you know, known for airs, whatever, has now Tahiti Chopu gets to be his favorite wave in the world. Like, it made me really, really, truly love Jadson Andre.
It's Italo's favorite wave too.
See those guys who those are the guys who are going, and obviously Jadson's going nowhere fast, but
he's already requalified for next year on the QS.
Oh yes. Good on him.
Dude, he requalified before the CT even started. He won three of the 10,000 point events before the CT started.
Yeah.
So, and that's generally 30,000 points is enough to requalify.
Wow. If someday Beach Grit's going to have enough money to sponsor a surfer, I can't wait to sponsor our first CT surfer. But if it was today, I'd sponsor Jets and Andre.
Would you?
Who would you sponsor? Derek Riley.
Does it have to be an unsponsored person?
No, you can sponsor anybody.
I really like Italo.
Yeah.
I'm an Italo fan.
The problem with your Jadson pick is your sticker is one of 100 on his board.
Oh, that's true. Well, I would make a package. I mean, again, this is all hypothetical, but I would force him to lose all the other stickers.
Okay.
Lose all his other sponsors.
Yeah.
He'd ride for Beach Crit.
I feel like you could outbid most of those.
I think
all collectively.
We've got Mitch Parkinson riding our tail pads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, we have
pads are those?
Beach Grit tail pads.
I'm a professional surfer.
Yeah. Not aware of Beach Grit tail pads.
They're coming out. You'll see them appear online. Maybe we can get you one. But the raw cost just blew out. We didn't factor in shipping and customs. And
oh, no.
Yeah, so we won't be making much money, but they look great. And yeah,
will Mitch be putting a Beach Grit sticker on his board?
Probably.
Is that part of the sponsorship?
Definitely put a sticking tail pad on there. There's no money involved.
I want to get into the board reviews you guys are doing.
Yeah.
And hear like what the idea is behind it. But also, you said a lot of guys in the lineup are talking about surfboards. I've found that is definitely true. But what's most interesting is that it's people who can barely surf. It's like the guys who tend to know the most and care most about their volume and all these fine details of design. I'm looking at him going, dude, you have a crazier quiver than anybody I know, and you barely, you can't even tell the difference.
I think unless you're a pro surfer, you don't need a quiver for one. You know, generally one surfboard's going to do you.
Well,
but it is nice to buy surfboards.
But I'm at the point now where I'm riding like a morning of
the earth. You don't ride anything, you just. I got a fucking sniffle. I can't go in the water. Jesus.
But I have the quiver in my bedroom, in my spare room.
Hey, girls, look at my surfboard.
Exactly.
This is for when it's big.
This goes on the dating app. You need the photos of the quiver. The mid-length Morning of the Earth is part of the quiver now.
We can burn that. Throw that in the fire.
You can't. I'm telling mid-length. You.
What's the mid?
The one that it's like a 610 channel bottom twin fin. The Morning of the Earth board you see Torin Martin riding and all those clips.
You know why those guys look so good on their board, those boards? Because they rip on thrusters and their feet are in the right place. And then regular people get it on and they just look so fucked on them.
If you try to rip the board, like if you try to actually surf the board, you look like a kook.
No, you don't. You just got to place them. And a good surfer knows where to place those boards, and that's when they look good.
Yeah.
But in the wrong hands, they look ghastly.
That's what I'm saying,
They feel good, though.
You get on it. Initially, you get on it, and you try to surf it like it's your shortboard, and you look like a kook. The board kind of has its own – it knows where to find the spots in the wave, and, like, you can't make it go. It just wants to do
it. Well, let's go straight out into the face.
Yeah. Well, my point is, if you do have a one-board quiver, that would be my one-board quiver at this point.
Really?
Yeah, dude.
Is that because of – the fact you don't surf and where you live.
1 foot to head high waves.
Yeah.
And it's super fun.
Really?
Where's the shortboard?
She got on Johnny Cabianca, Gabriel model, DFK.
Tell me where to find him.
Oh, just go to his website. Go to the Beach Grit Reviews, a little hot link in there.
So what's the deal with Beach Grit board reviews? What's the concept?
Oh, so we wanted to get more technical content in there. And Long Tom loves surfboards. Surf's good, lives at Lennox, perfect place to test them. And so we get boards. Most of them aren't paid. So we get two boards, one for an anonymous surfer, one for Long Tom, and another board, which we usually either keep or sell, or we ride for a while and we sell, and that helps cover the costs. But it costs us money to do them. So it ends up getting quite expensive because we have Filmer and we have the anonymous guy.
The anonymous guy is the pro.
Yeah.
So you got a pro riding them, you got a writer riding
them. There's actually a couple of anonymouses, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
You'd be surprised who they are.
Mm.
Very high profile.
Yep.
So the-
Someone got it in Insta the other day because it's a very high profile surfer.
Ooh.
One particular instance.
I've never let the cat out of the bag.
One of the greatest surfers of all time, I believe.
Wow. How about that? That narrows down the guessing game. I didn't
say the greatest surfer of all time. But I'm not discounting. It could be the greatest surfer of all time.
Mick Fanning.
You guys want to go barrel or not to close out the show?
Sure.
Yeah.
Barrel or not.
I'm sorry. I love these things. And Kukul Karan was so clever. I was just telling Chaz before, cause I didn't really get it at first until the other day he explained it, but it's so wild that it's either Karan having it or Kukul. I thought something was beginners would have, and others really good surfers would do. I didn't get the cool crap, but no, I love it.
Very, thank you.
You're very clever man.
Thank you.
The concept, you should explain the concept again behind Q Concurrent, because it really is the sleeper.
Thank you. So I'll be honest, I ripped it off partially. Adam Carolla does this thing called Rich Man, Poor Man. And he's like, there's things that only rich people and poor people do, and nobody in the middle. And so an example of that would be knowing a judge on a first name basis. You know, you're either a full-time criminal or you're high powered and you're constantly having curtains in your vehicle. So it's like a 70s Dodge Beater van or a Bentley, you know, incest, rich man, poor man.
So true. Well,
trailer park hillbillies or like the royal family.
Yeah. The middle class don't fuck the kids.
I don't think so. Not as much.
Not as much. Not nearly as much. So I was thinking about that one time and I saw a I saw somebody walking down the beach with a GoPro mount on the nose of their surfboard. And I was like, geez, that guy's obviously a kook. Then I go, no, well, Anthony Walsh does it as well. And I go, yeah, that's it. There's nobody in the middle who has the GoPro mount on the front of their board, right? And then I realized, then I saw some surf school where they had jerseys on over their wetsuit. And I'm like, well, that's clearly a kook move. No. Chloe Andino does that too. Oh my God, only the two ends of the spectrum. And so I realized there's a bunch of things in surfing that only kooks or currents do.
Brilliant.
And now so we're
going to put it on Beach Grit if we might.
Yeah.
And have it as, you know,
I appreciate it.
The thing, because I think it's very clever.
Dude, if that's my only legacy, I'd be very proud.
That's really good.
Child of Broken Hearts.
I'll send you the list of the archive, because I've got probably 10 or 15 now that are in the archive.
That'd be amazing.
But now I'm running out. I'm like, dude, I don't really see them that often
anymore.
But like, don't need to get into more. Anyways, barrel or nah, helmets.
I'm still going nah.
I think they definitely have their place. It's like a few years ago, I wouldn't have worn a helmet snowboarding.
Do you now?
Yeah, because my kids started wearing them. And then I thought, yeah, I'll wear one soon. I feel so much more confident. And when I was younger and Rick Gath came out with his helmet, everyone had them in WA. And all the kids used to train with them. And Saber Norris and all the family all wear Gath helmets. And I never wore one in the surf. But I could imagine it must make you feel.
But here's the thing though. I think even if it's better for you and even if you do it for safety, it's still not cool. Like seeing a guy like Easy Rider motorcycle guy, hair blowing in the wind. He's a madman, right? I mean, of course there's no helmet law in Nevada, I think, has no helmet. I mean, there's a lot of states with no helmet law. And so guys will cruise around without helmets. You think you're just, you know, one tiny little accident, you could be completely dead.
But Tom Carroll looks so cool with his helmet.
Some do. And I don't think they all look uncool, but I think me personally, putting on a helmet makes me feel uncool.
Yeah, fuck, I wouldn't wear a helmet. Plus, you know, you want the sun on your hair, get the golden bits in the ends and shit.
1,000%. And so that's
why. Vanity would keep it from me.
Exactly. So I don't think that it's not just because it's not functional or not better for everybody, or everybody should wear them, et cetera, et cetera. It's looking good in the face of death is I'm going down on that ship right there.
Okay. So what conditions would be required for you to actually strap
I would put one on, and feel complete shame, but put one on if I was surfing over like, you know, on a boat trip, maybe over really, really shallow reef. It was really dredging, shallow reef, then I might think, oh, okay, like, you know, I ain't no Owen Wright. I mean, I ain't no somebody who doesn't wear a helmet and surf good. Kelly's quote was that I can't remember where I saw it, but
I didn't need it.
Said something that the reason he doesn't wear a helmet is because he measures waves in millimeters.
Yeah.
Like in there. And I was like, you fuck you asshole. Like, what a dumbass thing to say. I mean, where Kelly is calculating, like what an arrogant ass thing to say. Like anybody knows what a millimeter is. So Kelly's scooting out.
I believed him.
No way.
I totally
believed
him.
Kelly's scooting out from under the lip. Ooh, with a millimeter to spare. He doesn't know what a millimeter is when he's surfing. There's absolutely no way. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Like his window of what he's measuring is way smaller than what mine is, but to break it down to millimeters is just such a Kelly thing to say. I measure waves in millimeters.
I would argue too, though, in that boat scenario that you're talking about over shallow reef, you probably wouldn't even be paddling out in those conditions. Anyways.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Once it gets to that level.
But so well, on
the boat though, if like you have to, cause everyone's sitting there watching and
that's what
I'm going to be the guy. I was on a boat trip about 4 years ago and we're at the Hole. Remember the movie, The Hole, with Tom Carroll and And it was a Jeff Hornbaker film.
Oh,
it's about this wave in a beautiful film, film in black and white, whatever. And on Martin Daly's boat, and they go to this place called The Hole. It's this big left. And it's just take off, barrel, and come out of a pretty shallow reef. And we were at The Hole about 4 years ago. It was probably 4 to 6 foot. And some guy stayed on the boat. And it was one of those, it's Indo, so the wave is really smooth. You could paddle down the face. And the, if you're ever going to get barreled on your backhand, it's in one place. But some people didn't paddle out. You know, so yeah, on a boat. And they were just, and their whole demeanor shifted after that. They were, subconsciously though, everyone relegated them down a few rungs and
that's
and they're
that's,
ashamed.
That's precisely what I'm talking about. That is precisely,
you have to go.
That's precisely what I'm talking about when you're compelled to go at a very shallow, that normally you probably wouldn't, or at the very edge of your ability, but you are compelled to go. And not only you're compelled to go and, you know, panda it, like sit out in the lineup and, oh, I try a, you know, fake paddle for some, like, but really actually pull into some waves and, or get rolled over the reef. Then I would feel shame. But my shame would be putting on a helmet, not staying on the boat.
Yeah. Which is what William's dealing with right now.
Yeah.
I mean, he had helmets at his disposal, like impact vests, full four different rescue teams. Still didn't go.
Yep.
Ouch.
Shame.
All right. So we're going nah.
I'm going
for
nah.
Chaz and yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say barrel for helmets because I think, particularly for kids in a crowded lineup where I live at Bondi or whatever. This kook's just throwing their boards away.
Oh, and I mean, I put a helmet on my daughter to go surf all day, every day, but I also put a bike helmet on her and to and a skateboard helmet on her, which I don't remember? Ever put a helmet on to
yeah,
skate.
Yeah, or yeah, bike yeah or I can't imagine ever putting a helmet on.
No.
Dude, when we were kids, though, it was embarrassing to wear a bicycle helmet now, or a skate helmet. Now you can't imagine not.
I can't, yeah. I would never let her even kick down the sidewalk without
right,
a helmet.
Right. Well, the reality is, it's fun to make fun of this stuff, but like, it doesn't take much head trauma
sure.
to ruin your life.
That's what I'm saying. I'm going down in the face, just staring at death with my beautiful sunny hair.
But I can't imagine ever putting on a helmet. Yeah, that's conditioned. I'm going to put that helmet on. It must be my helmet over here.
Yeah.
It must be in my quiver. One day when I'm back in the ocean, I'll...
I'm going to send you a photo from the beach tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Wearing a helmet.
Squinting at the sun. Damn.
Riding my most colorful, like asymmetrical board.
So this one on my backhand, I need a shorter rail.
Huntington no. Beach.
No longer rail on your backhand, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. I don't know. I still don't.
It is. It's longer on your backhand.
But, that's who you talked to.
When we're talking
oh,
about
really?
When we're
for
talking
the
about when we're talking about, thinking, I was thinking about ASIMs, I was going, imagine if it was the longer rail on your forehand and the shorter rail on your backhand. Or was the other way around?
Yeah. No, it's your longer on your backhand.
Yeah, yeah, right. Because you pivot more and you stay more in the pocket.
Exactly.
Right? It depends who you talk to.
Who, though? Who does it? Who does it longer on their forehand? Which ASIM?
I don't know, to be honest. I'm having a hard time accessing the information, but I've heard very conflicting info. Like, honestly, I am.
Out of your head because of the cold.
Yeah, exactly.
It's troubling you.
I only ride the best ASIMs around. Matt Parker's from Alm Surfboards.
Yeah.
If he does long rail on the backhand, that's the way it's supposed to go.
Yeah. All right. I can't honestly get into it at the moment. Anyway, I mean, I just can't access it. Barrel or nah, number two, flat earthers.
I'm gonna
it's
go.
Funny. It's like talking about sorry. It's like talking about transgender issues. It's such a micro kind of issue that doesn't affect anybody. It must be the tiniest proportion of people who actually think the world is flat.
It's growing.
Flat earthers.
It's millions of people at this point.
I'm gonna go barrel on them because they're amusing. They're amusing people. I'm gonna say the flat earth issue. I do not believe in the flat earth, but I like that people are adopting. I mean, it really honestly feels like we've reached, again, tipping point, a human tipping point, which I hate to talk about because, again, Derek and I were talking about it this morning after the surf. Every generation certainly felt a tipping point, and there's been way worse. Imagine, I told Derek, imagine, you know, living in that, like, or being 30, 20, whatever, at the height of Vietnam, right? Where you're possibly going to get shipped off to die. There was tens of thousands of people dying, you know, monthly. You're getting shipped off to die. Your home country is literally on fire, splitting apart at the seams, race riots, blah, 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 blah. And we sit now and think, oh, you know, we've got it way worse because we have what, Donald Trump as president or whatever, right? Yeah. Imagine growing up in World War II when the world, entire world was literally at war.
Well, I think that when you have no problems, then you manufacture
sure.
things.
Which and happiness, that's like happiness and sadness is relative. You know, we just feel totally. We just feel that balloon, that little bag inside us. So whatever we got.
It's like a dog who has all the luxury and comforts of staying home. They just start scratching somewhere until it rubs it raw. I think that's what the flat earthers are. It's like we've run out of problems. Now somebody creates some little thing that's controversial. Cool. let's glom onto that and discuss it.
I barrel flat earthers though, purely for the entertainment I get with Kelly Slater fighting them. Kelly Slater.
I love Kelly fights the flat earthers.
Completely.
Yeah, I love that he just engages, period.
Yeah.
Like, and he'll engage on Instagram with us or whoever just about something inane. And I'm just like, dude, you run multiple businesses. You're traveling the world nonstop. You have family relationships. How do you have the time to engage in this conversation?
But just like everybody else, now he's just staring at his phone the whole time.
I know, that's the problem, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kelly Slater must be staring at his phone basically every minute that he's out of the water.
Isn't that wild?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But God, he gives us some amazing performances, doesn't he?
Oh my goodness, and amazing content.
Yes, everything. He just gives and gives and gives for so long, 30 years.
Really does.
Ever.
All right, so we're going barrel on flat earthers. Eric, do you have an opinion?
I'd say barrel because it makes things interesting because I think it's such a micro issue that if people are picking up on it and you're asking about it, then it's great. They've done a successful job. And I don't know why they just don't have the big party at the end of the earth. We can all sit on the edge with our legs dangling off.
Yeah.
That's the beauty. Why? I don't even want to
think it's a dome. Now. So there's no edge. You get to the edge and it's a dome. So you would run into a wall.
Is there really?
But it's it's honestly like Truman Show.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't even talk about it.
There's a documentary. The reason why I brought it up is there's a new documentary on Netflix about it.
Oh, okay.
Really interesting. They interview the guy who like founded it basically. And they're smart people. Like it for all intents and purposes and other aspects of their lives, they're smart people. So to me, it's interesting just from a psychology standpoint that there is something going on societally now where we want to pick these nonsensical battles to fight about with people almost because there's nothing else of important in their life.
We need it. We really need a good war. We need an existential war, which we'll probably get.
Yeah.
You know, because my parents' lifetime, the Japanese were on our doorstep. You know, I took my kids to this beach in Sydney and there's all these guns there. They said, what are the guns for? I said, well, when the Japanese came into the harbor. So we had Japanese submarines in Sydney Harbor. That's how close we were to being overtaken and, you know, enslaved by the imperialist Japanese.
That's
and then
wild.
We have Andy Irons board shorts and an imperialist Japanese flag, which is the equivalent of the swastika. I was joking about it the other day with someone. It's so funny. We had Andy Irons with effectively swastikas on his board.
I wonder, obviously they wouldn't do that today, the Rising Sun. It was the one iconic board short, I think, of that decade.
Yeah, and, amazing. It's a beautiful flag.
Sure, and there was no other iconic board shorts, I don't think. Everybody who paid attention to pro surfing at any level, I think, knows Andy Irons' Rising Sun board short. Yeah. Imagine today with China being a, you know, market, I guess, for surf stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, because it was the Chinese who were taking the brunt of Imperial Japan.
They got fucked by Japan. I reckon you could do it again because people's knowledge of history, particularly, you know, 10 years even further down the track is even less.
People
wouldn't even recognize.
Look at that red circle with the pretty red things coming out of it.
Yeah.
So nice.
All right, barrel or not, number three, parents as surf coaches.
Oh, nah. Such a nah. The best thing you can do for your kid is leave them the fuck alone. Make them buy their boards, save up for the boards. And just go surfing. If they're surfing with you, if they ask you something, say, yeah, whatever. Never offer them opinion. Never tell them they're turning on the wrong wave. Never say, go this one. Da da da. Shut the fuck up. If someone's going to, if you have to have coaching, which it's leave it to someone else.
Complete no. I mean, it's embarrassing to quote the hockey coach from Letterkenny. It's embarrassing.
I don't think listeners have been clued into Letterkenny yet.
Oh, have they
did
not?
Did we talk about
I think we talked about
it. You did talk about it when you talked about Succession. I was driving through Big Sur until I ran out of fucking internet access. I was listening to you guys.
What are you doing here, by the way?
I had a little job up in San Francisco. Went to see some heavy metal band for an interview.
Fun.
And then I drove down and had to pick up some Timmy Patterson boards for the next Anonymous review.
Epic.
Some Italo's.
Can you say what the job was? I mean,
it was a little side gig for me and Chaz, but we went and saw, Metallica.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How'd you like Big Sur?
I was fucking terrified the whole drive because I was heading south. So you're on the edge.
Yeah.
And my hands were getting so sweaty. I was worried that I was going to slip and go off the edge.
Yeah.
And I was like this the whole time. I was rubbing my legs. So fuck, I didn't have any music. I didn't have any podcasts or anything. And then, you know, they're just going, don't get stressed if someone's coming up, locals coming up behind you trying to get you to go faster. It's just going, and I wanted to turn around after about 20 minutes and I couldn't, so I had to do the whole thing. But then I got okay at the end. And then once it finally finished, I was just banging the freeway. 100 miles an hour, just going, yes.
Imagine going to Australia, fresh off the plane, right-hand drive, right-side drive, and doing a like sheer cliff drive when you're driving on your right hand side.
So you did that for all in one day from San Francisco down to here?
Yeah. So I left at lunchtime and drove down. I stopped at Mavericks when I had a look at Pillar Point.
Derek saw Mavericks for the first time ever.
Yeah, so cool. That's pretty cool. And then
WSL's punching boy. Dirk Ziff was there just pissing in the water, laughing.
Well, I'm disappointed you couldn't take more little detours, that you did it all in one day. It'd be nice to stop.
David Lee is a big fan of the Big Sur.
Oh, really? Yeah, it looked beautiful and stuff, but I really like just going places, just going bang, 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 bang.
Fair enough.
And even you're solo too, you know, I could sit in the hot tub by myself and it's great.
You could surf in Big Sur a little bit.
Yeah, it was pretty ugly. It's funny, I was driving down, I'll have a swim or a surf or something. I saw the dreamiest beach and there was like a 4-foot shore. It looked incredible. But no, I went them actually in Big Sur and the wind came up and couldn't get down. They couldn't work out how to get to the beach. Right. Went to one place and it was $10 to park. And
yeah.
But I saw the elephant seals and they're lovely.
If I surfed, I would do it.
Yeah.
All right, boys, anything else to pitch or that you want to share with our public?
I've got a big Italo profile coming up on the next couple of days.
No way.
It's funny. Connor Coffin was saying that the surf media has sort of lost its way and he used to love reading profiles. And then so James said, why don't you go and do a profile on someone? Who would you like to do? And of all the guys, I said, I wouldn't mind going to do Italo. So I flew over to Margaret River and did Italo profile. And there's one in the Surface Journal as well coming up.
How was Italo?
Piece of gold. The Brazilians I'm such a Brazilian fan, you know, after years of being with the Australians, whatever. And the Brazilians are just always so welcoming and funny and so different to Americans and Australians, where there's all that whole kind of pretend to be cool sort of stuff. And I went away with Felipe for a week in Mexico a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, Lakey and Simpo and whatever would go back to the house. They'd just be sitting under those little shelters, just banging the bongo drums and singing, and didn't want to go back. And they'd surf 5 or 6 hours, and everyone's going, "I gotta get a cliff bar. I gotta hydrate." And all this stuff, just banging the bongos, having a hell time. And Italo was like that with his chick, and making me lunch and breakfast and dinner. And
how much time did you spend with him?
A couple of days.
Awesome.
Mm.
Okay, cool. I'm anxious to see that.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, gentlemen, thank you to Surfing Heritage and Culture Center for hosting. I was going to say that video, The Hole, is probably on the wall over here.
Oh, you should watch it. The wave is insane.
Yeah. But until next week, Chaz.
Yeah, Barrel.